We've had 3 days of record heat in the state of Nebraska. You know what that means, don't you? It's gonna snow like a bastard tomorrow. Good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the MoPod podcast. With me, as always, is, well, just me. It's been ridiculously nice in the heartland this week. It's, you know, late January and now early February, and we've had 2 days of record-breaking heat, high 60s, some reports of 70 degrees in the area. I've had windows open. I've been able to kick my kids outside to play without coats on. It's just ridiculous. Of course, it's, you know, 15 degrees when I drop the kids off at school. But by the time they get out of school, it's pushing 60. It's just stupid. I cannot believe this. But as we all know, global warming is a myth. All right, that's about all the political nonsense I'm going to bring to this podcast. because if I were going to go off politically, let's just say it would be bad. It would be very, 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 very bad. So I'm not going to do that to you guys. I'm really not looking forward to the temperature change. I feel kind of spoiled because the winter time for me is my big vacation of sorts. I don't put in a lot of time at work because there's not a whole lot for me to do. This time of year I go in, I do some paperwork. I try to write when I find the creative drive to do so. That's been kind of lacking this off season. Excuse me. A good time for me to get sick, like I've been. And it's not often that I get to have this nice weather. It's usually I'm bundled up inside of my cold-ass office, freezing to death, and being very, very miserable. Whereas now it's been nice out. And this town comes up anyway. As I mentioned before, in between snowstorms, people forget snow before in their sad, pathetic little lives. And as I'm talking, I see that there's like a dead fly stuck in my keyboard. That's sexy. Wonder how long that's been there. Anyway, so the one nice thing about the weather being mild is people haven't had cause to drive that stupid. At least not as stupid as they're going to here in the next 48 hours. And what really sucks about people already driving poorly is navigating through school parking lots. And I may have talked about this last year, I don't know. But every morning I drop my three oldest kids off at school. And when it's nasty out, I pick them up in the afternoon. And it's a small parking lot. It's not well designed. It doesn't flow well. And it also doesn't help that nobody else there obeys anything resembling motor vehicular laws. I have been cut off. Well, I'll turn on my blinker and start to peek out off of the curb and into the lane, and here comes somebody driving a good 40 miles an hour, zipping past, blaring on their horn, because since they're speeding, I'm obviously infringing upon them in some way. In the afternoon, I always like to get there a half hour before school gets out, so I can get the good spot. I like to get a spot along the curb. That way I don't have to worry about backing up, because not too many people are going to be courteous and stop and let you back out. Some will, some won't, but it's a gamble I'm just not willing to take. So I get there a half hour before the kids get out. Gives me time to read, listen to some music, play Words with Friends on my phone. And it never filled two or three parking spots worth of space being wasted. Because the people will not park with anyone else in mind. It's kind of like that unwritten rule when you go and you fill up your gas, you fill up your vehicle with gas, you park so that, in theory, somebody can pull right up behind you and pump their gas. It should be the same way outside of a school parking lot. Yeah? Where if you're going to be parked along the curb, you should have you should be thoughtful enough to pull ahead so that the next person can just back up in front of you. Or so that there is not any wasted space. I'm not bitching about having to parallel park. I can parallel park. In fact, I parallel parked a couple weeks ago like a boss. Like a boss. But some of these people only leave enough space between themselves and the next vehicle to park one of those smart cars. You know, the cars, it doesn't look like a real car. Looks like a toy car. Looks like something my 5-year-old should have in his toy box and would probably fit in his toy box. You could parallel park one of those, and even then you would have some difficulty. Because nobody can, and it drives me nuts, and there's nothing I can do. I can't be the guy to walk up and, "Hi, excuse me, you parked like a dumbass. Could you scoot up a little bit? Thank you ever so much." This morning I dropped my daughter off. I'm getting ready to turn the corner. I have a yield sign. So I'm yielding, being the man, obeying the sign, yielding. The guy on the curve in front of me sees me, panics, slams on his brakes to let me pass. Move! I'm yielding! You don't have to yield. You don't have to do anything. Drive! Just go! Go! And then for all of my bitching, what do? I park in the no parking zone, and then I get yelled at by a bus driver. Sorry. So now I'm in my routine. I get the kids dropped off. I narrowly escape the pit and the pendulum that is the school parking lot. I go to the post office. I go inside, empty out the P.O. box for work, go out to my truck, and I go to turn the corner. Now, the problem is directly behind the post office in this town is the middle school, the public middle school. There is no parking lot, really, to speak of. There is just... And there's intersections, there's stop signs, but I don't think anybody actually knows that the stop signs exist. Several times because people will just slam on their brakes right in front or in the middle of the intersection, let their kids out, and while they're letting their kids out, they see Bob. "Oh, Bob! Hey, Bob, how are you doing? Yeah, you dropping the kid off?" "Yeah, I'm dropping mine off too." "Oh, yeah, you go into some other thing with the stuff." "Yeah, I had an invitation to that thing with the thing of the stuff." "The guy in the white pickup? Ah, no, I'm sure he's fine. He's probably just dropping off his kid." Yeah, no, please tell me about your stuff." "Oh, that's great. God, the guy in the white truck behind us is getting really pissed off. Why doesn't he just let his kid out and go? Ha ha! Oh, he doesn't have a kid. Oh. Nah, you can still wait a few more minutes. Tell me about your thing with the stuff." And I'm cursing. I'm freaking out. I can feel an aneurysm building in the back of my head. And then I finally, the two schmucks pull off, and I can now go, and somebody darts right in front of me. And I'm thinking, "You son of a bitch! Couldn't you see that I'm coming? Could you not see this big white vehicle with its lights on and..." That's when I realize I don't have my lights on and it's still dark out. And I have put face to face with the fact that I am just as big of an asshole as everybody else. Now, does this make me more conscious of my behavior? Does it force me to improve my own driving habits and make me a better commuter? No. It makes me more aware of the fact that I'm a prick and full of self-loathing, so now I'm even angrier and more hypercritical of everyone else and bitchier about everybody else sharing the commute into work. God, I hate that school parking lot so much. Oh, but let's not talk about unhappy and unpleasant things anymore. Let's talk about good things. Like, for example, did you know that the first two books written by one Matthew Mosman are now available through Barnes & Noble for the Nook e-reader? You say, but Mo, I don't have a Nook e-reader. But I have a smartphone, and that's when I say to you, my friend, that you can, just like with your Android phone and the Kindle application, you can go and get yourself a Nook program free of charge from Barnes & Noble for your smartphone, be it a BlackBerry, be it a Droid, be it an iPhone. You can even download software to read them right on your computer, so you are really running out of reasons, kids, to rush out and purchase Our Own Devils or Time with His Fools and read them at your own leisure. In fact, I was more than delighted to find out that within the first 48 hours of being available through Barnes & Noble, that the first two books, the only books I put up on Barnes & Noble, Our Own Devils and Time with His Fools, I sold two copies of each. Not too bad for the first 48 hours. I haven't sold one since, and also sitting patiently waiting for you at Amazon.com is my new book, Wanderers. No one's bought a copy of that one yet. I'm just saying. But it's there. It's $5, just like the other ones. So hopefully you buy one of those. Be a pal. Help me out. Stroke my ego. No? All right, well, forget you then. In that case, we'll just go ahead and get it back to business as usual. And we are up to chapter 33 in Our Own Devils. That was page 248 for those of you keeping track at home. Page 248 of 273. So, what you have to be asking is Mo going to get crazy? Is he just going to finish reading the whole book? Well, there's only one way to find out. As per usual, I'd left my cell phone in the car while I'd been inside Jeff Carey's home. I'd missed five calls while inside from Lauren and had one voicemail message. The message was what I had expected it to be. Lauren angry at me for sending her to Lincoln in the middle of the night for what basically became a fool's errand because she was working with a client that was loud, uncooperative, and more intent on making sexual advances than aiding in his own defense while facing an unwavering legal counterpart. She was probably going to make me suffer for this whole ordeal for a very long time. I couldn't sleep when I got home. I was at that point of exhaustion where I wasn't tired enough to sleep, but not quite awake enough to function. I had no real food to speak of, and my milk had all gone so bad, so I sat on my couch in the darkness and ate dry cereal right out of the box. The modern bachelor at home. I tried to focus and think about what I knew. That was difficult. Sinovic had killed Alex. I knew it with every fiber of my being. He killed her, dumped her body in a less than inconspicuous location, and used his contacts to cover it up. I still didn't know why, though. But anymore, I didn't really care all that much. I just needed to find a way to prove it. But who would I prove it to? County DA was in Vic's pocket, but I did have the lead investigator back on my side. He just wasn't that conducive to the whole idea. I could go to the state patrol, but with what? I had absolutely nothing for evidence, just some videotapes of the guy who was probably Vic working with Alex. Hardly an indictable offense. The only witness I had was no doubt in the wind and would be impossible to find. I had nothing. What if I went at it differently? I just wanted Vic to suffer and be punished. If I couldn't get him for killing Alex, what if I could get him for jailed for racketeering? Sure, it'd be like convicting Al Capone for tax fraud, but maybe it would help me to put the whole ordeal behind me. But how would I go about it? The obvious route was to sell out Carrie, but I didn't really want to. He wasn't a bad guy, really. He just made some bad decisions. Applegate I'd turn in, but not Carrie. Applegate. I said it out loud in the darkness to no one. Sure, he hadn't said anything about it, but Applegate was Cinevec's lawyer. Applegate had to know what type of business activities Vic was into. He wasn't a criminal lawyer, but someone with his background in real estate and financial law would prove valuable to Cinevec with covering up his dirty deeds and ill-gotten gains. Plus, I still had a little leverage on him. I needed to find Russell Applegate. The nice thing about trying to find pompous idiots with money is that they don't know how to go underground. To them, disappearing for a while means going on vacation for a few weeks and leaving their cell phone or BlackBerry behind. Most of the time, the only people they're hiding from are their friends or co-workers or maybe a bill collector here and there. Probably even some family members. That's why, with the help of both stop across the street from a Hilton hotel in Orlando, Florida, my credit was going to be shot to hell when this was done. I was in full movie detective mode. I was wearing a brand new Florida ball cap pulling at the front door of the hotel over a copy of USA Today. I had been in the lobby a few minutes earlier and spent several hours in a rather nice chair watching the elevators with my newspaper until the house detective came along and very nicely bounced my ass out of the building. The next couple of hours sitting on a bus stop, I hadn't seen Applegate the entire time. From my brief time inside the lobby where I read about the hotel, I knew it had a very nice outdoor pool and a weight room, plus a pretty new world in Epcot. The family would have to leave the safe confines of the hotel at some point. I just had to be patient. That could be a problem. I didn't know how much patience my ass had for sitting on a wooden bench. Fortunately, I only had to wait until the early evening. It was shortly after 6 o'clock in the evening that the family Applegate emerged from the Hilton. I'd never learned much about his family, but then I learned that he had a pair of daughters. One a teenager, the other a tween, as they were being called. Neither daughter looked very happy. Then again, the family set off walking on foot, and I followed them. They walked to a McDonald's only a few blocks away. It was the craziest damn McDonald's I'd ever seen. Not only did it have a large activity playroom with a ball pit and plastic tubes to crawl through, but there was also a small arcade. It was like it had combined with a Chuck E. Cheese's. The family went inside, and I followed. I even stood right behind them in line, still wearing my Marlins cap and aviator shades. Applegate even looked at me once while we were in line. I truly was a master of disguise. The Applegates got their food order and sat inside the giant play area. I sat in a booth with a view of the lone entry and exit to the play area and waited for Russell to come out by himself. My Big Mac and fries were all but gone when he finally emerged from the play area. He didn't look happy. His family still looked miserable, too. The video arcade, where his girls undoubtedly wanted to be, was outside of the play area, and his daughters were too old to play inside of the obstacles in the play area. Way to go, Dad. He walked towards the bathroom, and I followed. He entered the men's room and seemed shocked when the door didn't close behind him. He looked at me for the second time, but this time actually realized who I was. Connolly! He said, startled as he backed away from me and against the wash basin. What the hell are you doing here? How did you find me here? Russ, I said, shaking my head as I took off my sunglasses and walked over to him. If you don't want anyone to find you down here, you shouldn't be paying for everything with a damn credit card. Jesus, he said as he started pacing around the washroom, rubbing his receding hairline. He was dressed like a tourist, wearing a red Nebraska Cornhusker polo shirt and a fanny pack. It would have been funny were it not so pathetic. What do you want from me? You said you'd leave me alone. Come on, Russ. You know exactly what I want. I want Sinovec, and I want you to give him to me. I don't even care if it has to do with Alex. I want him for whatever he could possibly be prosecuted for. Are you out of your mind, Connolly? You know damn well I can't do that. If I did, he'd kill me. Besides, it'd be a violation of attorney-client privilege. Come on, Applegate. You know damn well that criminal acts aren't covered by attorney-client privilege, so talk. He shook his head. You don't understand. I don't do anything for Steven that would violate privilege. Would I know what about... Well, I don't do anything legally with him. Anything I had to say would be hearsay. I can't help you.
Does your wife know that?
What do you mean?
I'm just to shed on the situation. Maybe she knows something that would help me.
Stay away from my wife.
There was something in his voice. It wasn't threatening. It sounded more like panic than anything else.
She doesn't know anything.
She still does anything about Alex, right? About your phone calls to her? Applegate smiled, looking like
anymore.
I laughed. It was sharp, and it made Applegate jump.
For a big-time attorney, you're kind of a dipshit, you know that? I said, wiping a tear from my eye.
Spur of the moment vacation after talking to Sinovec. He probably told you that he'd taken care of those tapes I made, right? That's fine. But what you and he didn't think about was the fact that I had one more recording. The one I had with me in the hotel room. Remember?
You're bluffing, said Applegate.
His voice was thin and had nothing resembling confidence. It was shaky and weak. He knew I had it. I pulled out my tape recorder and played part of his message to Alex for him again.
I can still play it for her.
Unless you can give me something I can use against Sinovec. Anything. He closed his eyes and let out a long sigh of defeat.
The wife.
Excuse me?
The wife, Mary. Talk to her. She knows about everything, even the girl. She wasn't very happy about it. Maybe you can get something out of her.
It felt like it took forever to get home. While I was spending a stupid amount of money flying out to Florida on the spur of the moment, I was at least trying to be sensible about it by flying standby. At least I hadn't planned on staying long and brought only a shoulder bag that I had kept in a locker near the Southwest Airlines terminal. Fortunately, not too many people were eager to fly to Nebraska that late in the day. I waited for only a couple of hours before getting the opportunity to sit between a 300-pound man with a patchy beard and acne and an elderly woman who reeked of what smelled like Ben Gay and peppermint schnapps. It was a long flight home. I tried sleeping on the flight back, but quality rest was fleeting. I spent most of my time on the flight trying to keep from drinking. It wasn't easy. I finally got back to my apartment after 10 at night, feeling exhausted and filthy. I stopped at a McDonald's on the way home from Epley Airport and ate a quarter pounder with cheese as I drove home. I got home shortly after midnight. Instead of trying to fit in some quality sleep, I showered. Afterward, I tried to ignore the bluish and purplish patches of puffy skin under my eyes as I shaved. I lay down for a moment afterwards to air dry and close my eyes briefly. When I opened my eyes, it was early morning in 36 hours. I slept without even realizing it. I dressed quickly, wearing a pair of jeans, sneakers, and a Led Zeppelin t-shirt, as well as a light jacket to cover the Glock that I still wasn't supposed to be carrying and had stuffed in the back of my jeans. It was close to noon. Mary Sinovec worked the second shift. I assumed it started around 3. I had just enough time to get her home, talk to her, and hopefully put this entire mess to bed.
All right, there you have it, kids. The penultimate entry of Our Own Devils. Coming up next week, the thrilling conclusion. I hope you will join me. Because, well, if you're not here, then I'm just doing this basically talking to myself.
That's not healthy. And then I am also faced with the quandary of what do I do in 2 weeks? I have two completed books I can read to you now. I have Time with His Fools, my so-called bar book, loosely inspired by my life as a bartender. Then I have my brand new book, Wanderers, my 30s sci-fi noir book, which came out on Barnes Noble just a couple weeks ago. Let me know. Go to the Mopod Podcast Facebook page. You can write on the wall there. Just drop me a message. Or you can even send me an email. You can contact me at mopod@live.com and let me know what you think I should do next. Wow. Who would have thought I would have actually made it this far and actually completed this whole damn thing? Not me.